welcome to episode 30, the season finale of season 4 of Victims of Fun. As usual, we are live for the last time from Mr. Fujiwara's top ramen shop in the Chiba district of Tokyo, right across from the Sailor Moon store. This is our last podcast from here, as we will be relocating back to the United States of America after a multi-year run here. It's kind of bittersweet. We had some great memories here. The very first episode we did back in season 1 was done right here. And with the exception of being on location a few times and one very memorable podcast from the United States when I went back for a bit, we've been here. And Mr. Fujiwara has been very good host. He's got very good ramen. And he's slowly turning this into a coffee jazz bar ramen shop thing. So it's just cool. It's nice seeing the evolution of this place from where when we started, when there was only a counter and a couple tables, to what we have now here. Mr. Fujiwara has been very good, and whenever you're in Tokyo, you should stop here and get some ramen. There is a slight rainfall outside, so you might be hearing the rain hitting the glass of the ramen shop. As always, I want to thank Anchor and Seagate and Blue Microphones and Apple. All of them have combined to make this podcast possible. Various components, microphone, solid state drive, laptop. And remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just search for Victims of Fun. You'll see our logo and follow. And we're on Pandora now, in addition to Spotify and Overcast and a whole bunch of other podcast hosting platforms, including Anchor, obviously. And remember, you can click the supporter button and become a supporter and throw me some money, because I need it. So, Spotify apparently has, Spotify and Anchor together have, because it's the same company, have launched a subscription-only option for podcasters, meaning if you're subscribed to a podcast, you can hear the podcast. I think that's more for people who actually have a bigger audience and a dedicated following, which I don't have. But apparently you can subscribe to people's podcasts. And so instead of getting the content for free and the podcast is having to rely on advertiser money or supporter money, they'd be getting guaranteed income because of subscribers. I don't want to do that, because I don't have enough people. And, you know, you should be spending your money on other things. But, you should be spending your money on me, let's be honest. But you shouldn't be locked into it. I mean, maybe you got $10 one month to throw me as a supporter, and then the next month you don't, and then the month after that you got maybe $5 and you want to throw it to me. But, you know, if I charge a subscription like $10 a month, there might be months you don't have it. With the world the way it is now, with this COVID bullshit and people not working and having bills to pay, you know, you shouldn't have another burden on you. You know, entertainment should be something that, you know, gets you through hard times. And you shouldn't have to pay for it. I mean, eventually I would do a subscription, but not for the general podcast. I was thinking of an idea of doing a subscription for a special no-holds-barred, uncensored version of the podcast where I really go off the rails. Because, you know, with this podcast, I kind of hold back and I censor myself, and but I could go all out. I mean, I'm talking like Howard Stern levels of just buffoonery. But I think what a subscription basis would be better for. And then something like that I would do you know, once a week. And I wouldn't charge that much. I'd charge maybe, you know, I don't know. Not even 10 a month, maybe 5. I don't know. You know, that's all in the future. Because, you know, you got to build an audience first. And I haven't done that yet. I don't have enough people listening to justify saying, okay, everybody who was listening for free, now you got to pay for it. And, if I was a listener and the podcast I was listening to and I grew accustomed to and I kind of liked suddenly said, hey, now you have to pay me for all the stuff you've been listening to for 4 years for free, I'd not listen anymore. Just out of spite. I mean, people do things out of spite sometimes. That's human nature. It's nothing bad. That's just how people are. It's like if you tell people over and over to do something, eventually they're going to do the opposite of it because that's just a natural psychological reaction. You know, it's like when you tell a little kid, you know, get over here, get over here, get over here, and he keeps walking away because you keep telling him. So you need to put him on a leash or tase him. You know, if you got a 5-year-old and he walks away and he doesn't come back, just pull out the taser gun and just bzzz. Or have a dog collar and a leash, and he gets too far away, just snap him back. You know, he'll come flying through the air and you just catch him. Or get some Flex Seal and just like Flex Seal his shoes to the pavement. So that way he can't walk. You know, that would work. It's probably a good thing I don't have any. No, it's a good thing I'm not raising a kid. Put it that way. Yeah, I don't know how people do it these days. I mean, I'm not raising a kid, thank God. But I would be like the worst, because nobody would ever be good enough. Like especially if I was raising a daughter. Man, I'd be like, you ain't dating until you're married. I wouldn't let her out of the house. I would just be like, you go to school, you come home, you have no friends. Because nobody would ever be good enough. And if I was raising a son, I'd be like, son, you're 8. It's time for you to get a job. You know? Type of thing. And, you know, if I had a son and he comes home, you know, 4th, 5th grade, daddy, I have a girlfriend. I'd be like, yeah, is she hot? That's the type of guy I am. That's the type of father I'd be. So it's probably a good thing that I don't have to deal with kids. You know, you just pass them off on their mothers and let their mothers deal with it. And then when they get married, you get to walk them down the aisle. That's all I care about. You know. Doesn't cost any money. Just go. You know. It's too much trouble. And they end up breaking your heart anyway. Or they wreck your car. Oh, daddy, can I like borrow like the Tesla? Because like, I want to go, like, driving. Like, yeah, okay. Hour later, daddy, I, like, wrecked a Tesla. You know, my first car was a rusted-out piece of crap 1974 Ford Pinto that my grandfather gave me. And I thought he didn't like me because of this car. It was a piece of garbage. But, you know, I see on social media and YouTube and Facebook and wherever, oh, I'm 18 and mommy and daddy got me a Mercedes, but it's the wrong model and I hate my parents. They don't love me. Like, bitch, I drove a 74 Pinto. Get your entitled ass in that Mercedes. Like, I hate stuff like that. Like, if I was hyper wealthy and I had kids, they wouldn't get crap. Seriously. Like, you know. Like, oh, daddy, I need, like, an iPhone 12. I'd be like, here's something from Consumer Cellular. A little flip phone. There you go. Get a job. You know, type of thing. Daddy, I gotta, like, go to college. I'm like, did you get any scholarships? No. Did you play any sports to justify going to any college? Like, no. Like, well, I guess you're going to trade school, you're going to the military, because I ain't forking over 100 grand a year just so you can get a degree in gender studies. I mean, that's just not going to happen. See, that's something I kicked myself in the ass for. I should have went to trade school. I should have learned to be a welder or a mechanic or an electrician. I could have retired at like 40. I know people from high school who did that. I knew this one guy when, as soon as high school was over, he went, went to one of the Votech schools and became a diesel mechanic and eventually ended up opening up his own shop and pretty much retired at like 42. Because he has somebody else run the business. He owns it. But, like, he'll show up, like, once every, like, 3 weeks just to make sure everything's okay. But he spends most of his time, like, surfing. He's, like, a big surfer dude. And him and his wife will go down to Costa Rica for, like, 3 weeks surfing. He put the work in. He was working, like, 18 hours a day. So, God bless him, you know? Like, my cousin's husband was the same way. He started this business out of the back of a Datsun pickup. And, busted his ass. And, you know, at 50-something, he's an absolute success and just wants for nothing. And, you know, but he busted his ass to get there. It wasn't handed to him. But, yes, whenever I see videos like that, like, oh, my God, my parents got me a Range Rover for my birthday, and I wanted a Porsche. I hate you, Mom and Dad. I hope you, like, die. I just want to, like, jump through the screen and just, like, triangle choke the person out, because it's stupid, you know? You're entitled. You know, I drove a 74 Ford Pinto. That's what you deserve. Your bleach blonde hair and your Valley Girl talk and crap like that. I don't know. See, that's why I need you guys to support me and send me money, so I can go, like, live in a villa somewhere and not have to deal with the real world. Because, like, if I was living in a villa, like, in Greece or Monaco or whatever, I'd still do the podcast. I'd be doing it from, you know, next to my infinity pool, but, you know, I'd still be doing it, because, you know, that's just how it is, but... Yeah, you know, that'd be the life. You know, I'm wondering if when you die, if you get to pick how you come back. Like, I just imagine you die and you go up there. It's like, okay, you can go back. And what do you want to go back as? I mean, well, I want to go back as human. Like, okay, where and when? I'm like, well, you want to go back to the United States or maybe, you know, Monaco or somewhere really wealthy? And I want to be really hot, like, you know, and, like, born into an extremely hyper-wealthy family. But then everybody would be requesting that. Nobody would say, yeah, I want to be born in North Korea. Or I want to be born in, like, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. I mean, no, nobody's going to say that. So I think, basically, wouldn't it be something like if you die and God is like, okay, you got to go back. And the more... I don't want to say demands, because you don't demand anything to God, but the more conditions you put on you going back, the higher the... It's almost like a lottery. It's like, okay, if you don't demand... if you don't specify what you want to go back as, you just go back. Zap. And wherever you end up, you end up, and you have a 50-50 chance of ending up somewhere good or ending somewhere bad. Or maybe not 50-50, but... You have a better chance of ending up, you know, somewhere better. Like, well, I don't want to take the chance of ending up in North Korea or, like, in the middle of a jungle somewhere. So I want to go back as, you know, I want to go back as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed American girl born into a wealthy family in Florida or the West Coast. Or I want to be born in Monaco to a rich European family. You know, when you start putting options like that, it's almost like buying a car. The more options you put on, the more expensive it's going to get. So the more things you tell God you want to go back as, the likelihood of you getting to be that grows smaller. You know, and maybe if you didn't specify any of that, you had a better chance of ending up as that. But some people just don't want to take the chance and they're willing to roll a dice. Yeah. With my luck, I would like say, eh, you know, just send me wherever, and I, in my mind, would be like, yeah, okay, now I have a good chance of ending up somewhere good. Next thing you know, I'm born in a prison camp in North Korea, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm screwed. What the hell is this? You know, that'd be horrible. Or maybe you don't even come back here, because like God created the universe and God filled the universe with life. So it's not just Earth. We have a very Earth-centric view of the universe and religion. We think that ordinary people tend to view religion as, okay, God is just the Earth. But God, Buddha, Allah, Vishnu, whoever you worship, Yahweh, whoever, is the creator of the entire universe and everything in it. And that includes aliens. Okay, so like, maybe you don't come back here. Maybe you have a chance to be born in another part of the universe on a different planet, you know? I mean, do you get that option? Like, what are the chances of you coming back here, you know, in a very, very good position when you've got the entire universe as a possible landing zone? And that's even if you come back as, like, some sort of sentient life form. I mean, do non-sentient life forms or do, like, non-humanoid type of civilized life forms come into this? Like, okay, you have an equal chance of coming back as a bacteria as you do as a human or a xenomorph or whatever. I mean, oh my God. It's just like, how is that determined? Does God just like throw a divine dart against a giant dartboard and go, yeah, okay, you're going back as a slave on the planet Ypsilon-4? And you are a slave of the Ymir Empire, and your life expectancy is 500 years as a slave. So, have fun. It's like, hey, what? Hey, what the hell is that? I don't want to go back as that. But you see, here's the thing. If you have a choice, if everybody gets to choose, everybody's coming back as something cool. Nobody's going to say, yeah, I'd like to come back as a dung beetle. Or, you know, I'd like to come back as, like, you know, a titsy fly. Nobody's gonna be doing that. And if the qualification is okay, if you're born a sentient humanoid type of life form, and I know there's gonna be aliens that aren't human, but you know what I mean. That, you know, you have language, you have cognitive thinking, you can reason, you have a civilization, you know, blah blah blah. Alright, so I wanna come back as that. Well, you could come back as that on a totally different planet. Okay, so let's quantify this further. You're born on Earth, and this is the only place you can come back to. Nobody is going to say, yeah, I want to be born in a prison camp in North Korea. Ain't nobody going to do that. So, you still have a chance of coming back. And there's more poor people in the world than there are middle class or rich people. So the odds are greater that you're going to end up as some poor slob somewhere working your ass off for, you know, 60 years until you drop dead serving the, you know, 1% that hold all the wealth on the planet. I mean, what, you know, it's just dangerous. So if I can't come back as something or somebody really cool here, I wouldn't mind coming back as an alien, but, like, I want it to be an alien that's got, like, you know, Star Wars-level technology. I want to be able to jump in a spaceship and warp somewhere, and you know, I don't want to come back as, like, some xenomorph that just, like, goes around and, like, you know, spits acid blood on people. I mean, what the hell is that? You know, I don't want to come back as some, you know, slave to the Ymir Empire on the other side of the galaxy. Oh, God, and what if you're born into the Warhammer universe? Good Lord. If you're born into the Warhammer universe, and you are not born into, like, the ruling people, the Warhammer, like, if you're not born into, like, to become an Inquisitor or something, and you're just an ordinary citizen, you are so screwed. you are better off being born a citizen of the Galactic Empire, because the Galactic Empire, basically, as long as you didn't challenge their rule, they left you the hell alone. See, that's the one thing about Star Wars. Everybody's like, oh, the Empire is evil, the Empire, blah, blah, blah. I always used to tell people the Empire was not evil. It was harsh, but it had to be because of its size. You can't be any sort of government that big without having a strong central authority to keep everybody in line to prevent chaos. And people are like, well, they blew up Alderaan. I'm like, Alderaan was actually a legitimate military target, just like Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or Dresden. Legitimate military target. It was the seat of the rebellion against the lawful galactic government. And remember, Palpatine was voted into power. He didn't seize power. He was voted in. Okay, and think about this. Okay, so the Empire blows up Alderaan. What else did you see the Empire do that was so bad? Or what did you read about that the Empire did that was so bad? See, I've read all the books that are now not canon because Disney threw it all out. But most people regard them still as canon because Disney can go to hell. So the Empire didn't go around just wantonly blowing stuff up like the Imperium Man. Or like the Dune universe. They didn't just go around blowing stuff up because ha ha ha, we're evil. Alderaan was blown up because it was a military target. The only time the Empire displayed its iron fist was when they had violent uprisings against its rule. That's it. If you were a planet that was part of the Empire, and if you've read canon, if you've read the books, a lot of these planets had their own form of government. Some of them had their own emperors and kings and queens and priests and whatever the planet decided was going to be their government, the Empire let them have their government. The Empire let them have the laws that they had. So something that was legal on one planet could have been illegal on another. There was no unified code of law throughout the Empire because the Empire knew that that would be impossible to enforce. Now, they were allowed to have their own form of government. Some of the planets were dictatorships, some were monarchies, some were full-on representative republics or democracies or technocrats or oligarchs. It didn't matter. The Empire didn't care how you governed yourself. All right? So, each section of the galaxy was broken into a zone that the Imperial Governors oversaw. And those sectors were broken down into smaller sectors where there would be garrisons. So, basically, the Imperial Governors did not govern the planets. They didn't show up and run them or rule them. They were there to maintain order. Planets could not openly warfare against each other. If two planets had a problem with each other and started shooting at each other, the Empire showed up and said, okay, this war is over. We're going to settle this a different way. They didn't tolerate that. So, you know, one planet couldn't just invade another because then the Empire was going to show up, put a stop to it, and be like, what the hell's going on here? Because they, you gotta remember that the Empire wanted order and stability, not chaos. So, the Empire didn't restrict the planets as far as religion. The Empire itself, you know, the Emperor, you know, I guess he thought he was a form of a god or something, I don't know, but they didn't have any rules against practicing your own religion. They didn't care. There wasn't even really a censorship of the media in the Empire. As long as you didn't overtly challenge the rule of the Imperial government, the Empire didn't care what you did. Didn't care what you said. You didn't have to pay any sort of special homage to the Emperor, like his weight in gold or nothing. I mean, this is a true story. So, in canon, on the Imperial capital planet, Coruscant, in the Imperial Palace where the Emperor lived and conducted his business, there was a... Near there, there was a diner, believe it or not, a food establishment run by a non-human. I forget his name. I think it was Dex. Some big-looking alien. Looked like John Goodman as an alien. There was a passing mention in one of the books that every once in a while an Imperial representative would show up at the diner with an order that the diner would drop everything that they were doing to fulfill this order, and sometimes they had a day's notice to do it. And then the Imperial representative would take the order, they would pay, and they'd leave. And you know, people would ask, well, what was that for? And the owners of the owner of the diner and everything. It's just, you know, it's just an eccentric rich person who likes this food and whatever. Don't ask. Here, have a plate of something. But there's a passing mention in the book that was actually Emperor Palpatine, who liked the food from this diner and would send his rep every once in a while for his order for lunch or dinner. In that they would get the food there, and it would come, it would be scanned for any poison or anything, and then he would eat it. And the fact that the Emperor patronized the diner, he didn't want, it was like, you know, in the book they're like, oh, that's unusual, and somebody said, why? He has to eat. So, you know, there's always story, there's always another side to things, and I don't know how I got on this thing, but I remember I used to argue about this for hours with people at one of my old jobs of say, you know, the Empire actually were the good guys. They were actually not as evil. They were harsh, yes. Disciplined, yes. Loose with their morals when it came to, like, slavery and stuff, yes. Xenophobic against non-humans, yeah, they were. But they weren't throwing them into camps and killing them. They weren't, you know, they were just like, oh God, non-humans. Blah. They never did anything to them. The only time the Empire pulled out its iron fist is if you openly challenged their rule. Then they dropped the hammer of God on you. The rest of the time, they left you alone. I mean, the Imperial military was a voluntary thing. If you remember from... Star Wars A Solo story, Han Solo volunteered for the Imperial military. He wasn't drafted. I mean, Luke Skywalker and his friend Biggs were going to apply at the Imperial Academy. You know, I don't know how I got on this, but, you know, the Empire... If you think I'm wrong, fight me. Okay, just email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. I will gladly debate this for you, because let me tell you, the rebels were all scum, they were terrorists, and they upset the order and the peace that the Emperor was trying to proclaim throughout the galaxy. Plus, the Emperor knew the Vong were coming, the intergalactic invaders, and that's why he built the Death Star. The people just want to forget that. Palpatine was going to save the universe, and then they had to go and kill him. And then the Vong showed up, and over something like 50 billion people died in the invasion. Because, you know, oh my God, like, you know, we're being oppressed by the Emperor because he makes us, like, work. Ugh, God. See, there's SJWs everywhere. Alright, so, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with some non-Star Wars related stuff. So this is what happens when you have a script to go off tangent. Okay, hang on. And we are back. The second half of the season finale. The Victims of Fun. We got a nice trumpet thing going on in the background there. It's a rainy night in Tokyo. And Mr. Fujiwara's Top Ramen. In the Chiba District of Tokyo, right across from the Sailor Moon store. Last episode here forever. Bringing the band back to the United States of America after many, many years here in Tokyo at Mr. Fujiwara's. It's been a great ride, but, you know, sometimes things happen, and it's time to move on. I have some financial investments I want to look after, and I can do it better in the States, and that's where I'm headed. Back to Florida. Yay. Boo. Remember, you can email victimsoffun@mail.com. Send me your praise, your hate, your suggestions, whatever. You can follow Victims of Fun on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So look for Victims of Fun. Type it in the search. You'll see us right there. Follow us. Remember, we are on Spotify. We're now on Pandora. And you can listen to us on Anchor. Best podcast offer on the planet. Remember, you can become a supporter. Click that support button and throw me your hard-earned cash, because I desperately need the money. I give you all this stuff for free. The least you can do is give me some of your money. There you go. But, yeah, it's raining pretty good here tonight. It's kind of mellow with the music in the background and everything else. And one of the things I'm looking forward to about going back to Florida is working on my tan again. And apparently they just opened up a White Castle in Orlando. And there is there was a 4-hour wait to get in it. And I haven't had White Castles, thank God, since New Jersey, which would have been 2000. I mean, I can buy the frozen White Castles. And I've had those. And they're good, but they're not the same as... I think it's also the experience of, like, sitting in White Castle. And the White Castle ambiance, if you will. As Dusty Rhodes would say, if you will. It's funny, I was watching a video of old wrestling. I'm not into the new wrestling unless it's AEW. Like, WWE just does not do it for me anymore. But AEW, you know, Cody Rhodes, Jon Moxley, Sonny Kiss, Brian Cage, all those guys, that's old school throwback wrestling. I love that. What I like to do is, I like to go on YouTube sometimes and look up the old matches and the old promos. And whenever I want to laugh, I always pull up a Dusty Rhodes promo compilation. And I don't mean laugh like in a bad way, but just Dusty was just... He was hysterical. Even when he was being serious and threatening to, like, beat Ric Flair to death, he was just... The way he talked and the way he looked and his mannerisms was just... You know, he always said, "Let me tell you something." I've noticed that every wrestling promo, wrestlers always start off with, you know, "Well, let me tell you something." I mean, Hulk Hogan did, "Let me tell you something, Mean Gene, brother." And Randy Savage would be like, "Oh, yeah, let me tell you something." And they all did it. And, like, well, I know you're going to tell me something, and you don't have to ask my permission, just what the hell you want to say. But I guess that's an unwritten rule. I'll have to ask Vinny Massaro, like, if that's an unwritten rule with wrestling promos that people have to say, you know, "Let me tell you something." But Dusty had a whole bunch of, like, catchphrases, and... "Let me tell you something." He always go, "If you will." Now, I can't do a very good Dusty Rhodes impersonation, but it was always, "If you will." You know? "Like, the American dream. It's gonna be taking care of business, if you will." You know, he had that jive way of talking, like Muhammad Ali. But he always had his catchphrases, you know, "Gotta go to the pay window. If you will, take care of business." And he didn't say business. He said bidness. BIDNESS. It's just the way he talked. And he always said that's the bottom line. And there's one promo, I guess he was promoing on somebody. I think it was probably Ric Flair in a Horseman, like usual. And, okay, the bottom line, by definition, if you look at the way it's grammatically structured and the meaning that the phrase "the bottom line" is conveying, is this is the bottom, it goes no further. This is a finality. There is nothing else beyond this, because this is the bottom line. You know, kind of like in a financial thing. But the bottom line is supposed to indicate there's nothing beyond this. It can't go any lower or higher or move from this point. Well, in one promo, Dusty's going off on a Horseman, and he drops four bottom lines. And I'm watching this promo, I'm like, how many bottom lines is he going to keep dropping? You're never going to be able to, because he goes, and that's why I'm going to get you, Ric Flair. And the bottom line is, come March 15th at the Omni, you and I are going to get funky like a monkey. And the other bottom line is, Tully Blanchard, you stole my NWA World Television title. I'm going to get you, Tully Blanchard. And that's the bottom line. And the other bottom line, and he just drops four bottom lines. I'm thinking to myself, wow. You would need that excavator that dug the channel between France and England to even attempt to get under all those bottom lines that Dusty just dropped. And, you know, his other thing was funky like a monkey. He did a promo on Tully Blanchard's valet, Baby Doll. There was a storyline where Tully slapped Baby Doll, and Baby Doll, you know, ended up with Dusty because Dusty didn't hit women, even though he did before. he punched Baby Doll, I think, or slapped her or something. But anyway, so Baby Doll ends up with Dusty, and of course Baby Doll stabs Dusty in the back. And I think that the whole thing was, it was a setup to find out secret personal stuff about Dusty Rhodes. Like, he didn't live his life in the public eye. Like, everybody knew he did. So, he cut this promo on her, and calling her a Jezebel, and saying what he was going to do to her was going to be shameful. And he does this whole thing, he's like, Arn Anderson, what I'm going to do to you is going to be shameful. To the Blanchard, what I'm gonna do to you, it's gonna be shameful. And Ric Flair, what I do to you, and that's the bottom line, is gonna be shameful. But Baby Doll, Mama, I know you better than anybody. You know I know you better than anybody. It's gonna be shameful. I'm like, and he had this look in his eye, like, holy crap, he literally wants to kill Baby Doll. And it's just, it's hysterical. And, but he used to cut some, you know, and it was always, when I was, my friend Walter and I, we used to watch, you know, the old Georgia Championship Wrestling show that used to be on TBS back in the day. It was on Saturdays. I think it started at 5 or 6. It was on TBS for an hour and a half. It was Gordon Solie. And this is another announcer buddy. It was Freddie something or other. But anyway, so Gordon Solie was like the dean of announcers. I mean, you got Jim Ross. You got Gene Okerlund. Joey Styles. But Gordon Solie was like the gold standard. I mean, he really was. Gordon Solie was. He never lost his cool. He treated the matches with respect and with a dignity that I think a lot of today's audiences would just be like, wow, he's really taking this seriously. Because that's how man Gordon Solie was. And he's no longer with us. He died a while ago. But him, Gene Okerlund, Jim Ross, Lance Russell, all those old timers. And you know, Dusty would always give these promos and Gordon would sit there. And you know, if a wrestler got in Gordon Solie's face, it was always, you know, a big deal because the amount of respect the guy had. So anyway, my friend Walter and I used to watch, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, TBS. And we would have this thing where we'd make up promos given by Dusty Rhodes. And we'd try to out-Dusty each other. And, you know, and we both could not do Dusty Rhodes' impersonation because he did just very few people can. Though I heard Paul Heyman do Dusty's voice and he does it quite well, but I can't do it justice. But I'm gonna. So we would do Dusty Rhodes promos. We'd make up our own. And I remember one and Walter literally urinated himself laughing so hard. And my setup was Dusty Rhodes had been attacked by, like, he was at his breaking point because every heel bad guy in Georgia Championship Wrestling keeps attacking him in random places at random times in unexpected areas, and Dusty's just finally had enough and he comes out, and this is my promo I give for it. He's like, Gordon Solie, Fiend, everybody's coming for the American Dream, Eric the Red, you attacked me from behind. You hit me over the head with that coal miner's glove. Busted the Dream wide open. I'm gonna get you, Eric the Red. Holly Wraith, why are you sticking your nose in my business? I'm out there trying to have a match. You pull me out of the ring and you pile drive the Dream on his head on the concrete floor. I'm gonna get you, Harley Race, and at the bottom line. Tully Blanchard! You jump me in the parking lot as Dusty Rhodes trying to get in his Cadillac to go get something to eat. Dusty Rhodes get attacked by Tully Blanchard! Tully Blanchard, gonna get you, Tully Blanchard. Buzz Sawyer! I go to McDonald's. I order myself a Big Mac and large fries. Buzz Sawyer is making the french fries. Buzz Sawyer, don't put no salt on my french fries. My french fries come out, no salt. Buzz Sawyer laughing his bald-headed head off behind the window. Gonna get you, Buzz Sawyer. Nobody doesn't put salt on the American Dream's french fries. I go home. I come to my house. Ric Flair's in my yard. He's laying sod in my yard. Ric Flair, why are you laying sod in the front lawn of the American Dream's house? I ain't ask you to put no sod in. I like the grass all brown and burnt. I'm gonna get you, Ric Flair. I don't need you coming to my house and doing unwanted gardening. And then I wake up. The American Dream goes to sleep. I wake up in the morning. I come downstairs. Ernie Ladd's in my living room. Eating my chicken wings. Drinking my beer. Watching my TV. And he's watching the San Diego Chargers. When he knows the American Dream supports the Dallas Cowboys. Ernie Ladd, how the hell did you get the key to my house? Gonna get you, Ernie Ladd. You ate all my chicken wings. And that was my Dusty promo. It's like, poor Dusty, everybody was after him. And my friend Walter, he's like laughing his head off at it. And we would just try to out-Dusty each other. And it's just funny just thinking about something. You really need to go on YouTube. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, just... You gotta see the guy work the camera. It's incredible. And just go on YouTube and just type in, you know, Dusty Rhodes promos. And And putting all that aside, Dusty Rhodes in the ring was just brutal. I mean, he... If you look at him, let's be honest, Dusty was... had a belly, he was... his big ass, he was fat. He looked like he... the type of person that, oh my god, he's gonna have a heart attack if he walks 20 feet. But the man could go 90 minutes in the ring, nonstop. I mean, the guy may not have had muscles, but there was something underneath all that, because he's slamming people, he's going off the top rope, he's doing 90 minutes. Okay? I do 20 minutes on a battle rope, and I need to be resuscitated. And Dusty Rhodes gets in the ring for 90 minutes with Ric Flair or Tully Blanchard, bleeds 6 gallons of blood, and that night is going to White Castle. I mean, the man... Everybody always talks about, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's a genetic freak of nature or something like that because of how much in shape he was. No, Dusty Rhodes was a genetic freak of nature, because somebody that looks like that should not be able to perform at the athletic level that he did. Going nonstop for 90 minutes is what a soccer player does. It's not what somebody who's 300 whatever plus pounds, that looks like he hasn't seen the inside of a gym his whole life. That's not something somebody like that's able to do. And Dusty did it 300 nights out of the year. And if you watch AEW and you look at his sons, Dustin and Cody, those genes got passed on. Because the two of them, Dustin's the older one. Yeah, you may know him as Goldust. Dustin's his real name. And Cody is the younger one. And they both can go and go and go. Their stamina levels are just off the charts. There is something in the Rhodes family DNA that gives them the ability to outlast the people that they're going up against in some sort of cardio thing. I don't know what it is, but, you know, all respect to the modern pro wrestlers in WWE, like Roman Reigns and all them, but Roman Reigns would drop dead of a heart attack if he had to go 90 minutes. He gets blown up after. So, and there's a lot of rest spots in modern wrestling, you know, for a lot of the guys, because they have the bulk, they have the body, they don't have the stamina, because you have to trade off one or the other. You either have a chiseled physique, enormous power, or you have stamina. You can't really have all three in excess, because it won't work. And modern pro wrestlers, the ones who look like they're chiseled from rock, don't have the stamina. Now, they have stamina. They can go in the gym, work out, and run, and do what they have to. John Morrison's a good example of that. His parkour ability and his stamina is very, very good. But you gotta remember, guys like Dusty Rhodes or Harley Race pulling around the weight that they had on them, because they were bigger. And the fact that they could go 90 minutes pulling around an extra 150 pounds, you know, of just gut, is just amazing to me. It's just, and I'm not disparaging or making fun of them or the memories. To me, it's absolutely amazing that guys like that, Dusty, Harley Race, Dick Slater, Dick Murdoch, guys who didn't look like they really spent time in the gym because they weren't cut with the physiques like superstar Billy Graham or any of them. The fact that they could go in there and give 90 minutes or an hour nonstop and go into the showers, take a shower, and go out all night drinking or go back to their families or whatever, it's just, to me, it just blows my mind. And in my own working out ability, you know, my own way of working out when I go to the gym. That's the type of thing I shoot for. You know, I'm never going to, especially at my age now, I'm never going to have a chiseled physique. So, and I never did, but I always went for cardio. I always went for stamina. Because I think stamina gets you out of situations better than pure power. You have to have some. But the ability to outlast your opponent is a lot. There's a lot to be said for that. But Dusty had that in spades. And I miss wrestling like that. Because, you know, that's what I grew up on. And nowadays, you know, AEW is different. It's a better product. But, you know, living through the Hulkamania thing and the late WCW, you know, I was like, you know, this is getting to be too flashy. The matches are too short. Nobody really can give a promo like the old days anymore. And I've seen some good promos from some guys now, but the old promos, I mean, Harley Race would just sit on a stool in his 1970s style suit with his mutton chops, look in the camera, never raise his voice, tell you he was going to pretty much murder you. And even if you were just a fan, you felt like Harley was talking to you and that he was going to show up at your house one morning and just kill you. That's how good those guys were back then as far as delivering a promo and making you believe that they all hated each other. Because, you know, nobody protects the kayfabe anymore. They don't hate each other. Dusty Rhodes' biggest rival was Ric Flair. And there was love and respect between the two of them. All of them. And when Dusty passed, you know, the Horsemen, you know, Tully Blanchard and J.J. Dillon, all of them, they, I mean, you know, they gave interviews. They were just destroyed. Because outside the ring, except in very few cases, pretty much all the guys are, you know, it's a family type of thing. You had your outsiders like the Ultimate Warrior and people like that, but, you know, especially since you were driving back then anyway, you drove everywhere and you know, the boys would drive together and you had to kind of keep the illusion going back then as far as if you're a bad guy or a good guy. And I remember Iron Sheik and Jim Duggan got in a lot of trouble for that because they were feuding at the time and they were in a car and they got pulled over and arrested, and there's the two of them sharing the same car and it hit the newspaper and it was like, oh God, aren't they supposed to be like hating each other? And Duggan and Sheik were friends and, you know, Sheik lost his job over it. And because, you know, you had to, you protected it back then. And, you know, now everybody knows. You know, it's just, that's just how it is. It's more of a entertainment thing. Like, you suspend your belief in reality. But back in the day, you know, especially if you were a young kid like me, I thought that stuff was real. I remember seeing Mark Lewin put Austin Idol in a sleeper hold, and Austin Idol, he must have had Alka-Seltzer tablets in his mouth in like a plastic thing, and he bites into it. And he was foaming at the mouth because Mark Lewin wouldn't let go of the sleeper hold. I legitimately thought that Mark Lewin was going to kill Austin Idol. You know, it was just, I really believe when Baron Raschka put the claw on you that you could get brain damage. There was an infamous angle out of Memphis in Jerry Lawler's old territory, where Eddie Gilbert, the late Eddie Gilbert, hit Jerry Lawler with a car. And Lawler did the stunt himself. And I remember reading that they practiced it and practiced it and practiced it over and over and over and over and over and until they had everything set up right and they were all comfortable with it. Eddie knew how fast to drive the car, what angle. Lawler knew where to stand. Everything was timed perfectly because they had rehearsed it a bunch of times. And the Memphis shows were taped. They weren't live when they aired. So they show the confrontation, and then they had already taped the accident. They had already taped Eddie Gilbert running over Jerry Lawler before they filmed the in-studio stuff. So they have the in-studio stuff live. And then they cut to what they say is happening live right now, which is actually the tape. And everybody's wearing the same clothes. And it's the parking lot. And Eddie Gilbert runs over Jerry Lawler. Everybody believed it because it was so real. People actually called the police demanding that Eddie Gilbert get arrested. And the cops actually came down. And Lawler had to explain to them that, you know, this is all fake, it's all set up, and because, you know, Memphis, Jerry Lawler was God, and the police believed stuff like this was real. You know, the cops were fans. So Lawler had to expose the business to prevent Eddie Gilbert from getting arrested by saying, look, you know, we take this, this isn't real, here's Eddie right here, and Eddie was all like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, like, what's going on? And they had to, like, explain to the police, no, this is all set up. But back then, it was just a different... See, I miss that type of thing now. Like, when you saw Vince McMahon's limo get blown up, you knew he wasn't in it. You just knew, okay? You knew he wasn't in it. But when you saw Jerry Lawler get hit by a car, or you saw the Horseman slam Dusty's arm into the door of his car and hit it with a baseball bat, you believed that was a real incident. You believe Dusty's arm was snapped in two. You believe Lawler was pretty much almost dead from getting hit by a car. You believed all that stuff. And now it's just, you don't. You know, that you just don't believe it. I mean, they had an angle in the WWE where Randy Orton supposedly lit the Fiend Bray Wyatt, who was actually Mike Rotundo's son. Or he lit him on fire. Okay, he lit him on fire, and wrestlers have been lit on fire before. They throw fireballs at each other. It was flash paper. ECW, Tommy Dreamer got lit on fire, but it was a controlled thing. His jacket caught fire, and they put it out. But I'm talking Bray Wyatt, literally, his whole body was on fire, like he was put in a crematorium to be cremated. and it was a dummy Bray Wyatt, obviously. And I'm like, really? I'm supposed to believe that Randy Orton burned this guy alive and is not in jail. There's another match we had, Seth Rollins versus Rey Mysterio, and the object was to take out your opponent's eye. And I mean that. I'm not joking. The object of the match was to rip the eye out of your opponent. I mean, really? So, they have the match, and Rey Mysterio wears a mask, and they're going, and Seth Rollins, you know, throws Rey against the stairs, the metal stairs outside, at just the right angle, and Rey's holding his head and everything, and he rolls over, and there's his eye hanging out. But of course, his hands are over his eye socket, and you have an eye hanging out from his hands. Well, obviously, that's not real. And Seth Rollins throws up, and it's just like, really? And of course, Ray's back the next week, and his eye got popped back in. Now, Leon White, who went by the name of Big Van Vader, who passed away a couple years ago, one of the best big men that ever wrestled. Agile, mean, would tear you in half. Nicest guy in the world, though, outside the ring. He legitimately had his eye pop out in a match. I think it was against Stan Hansen. By accident, obviously. Stan didn't try to do that. Stan was actually a very nice guy. But he worked stiff, because Stan was almost legally blind. He wore glasses that were like 4 inches thick. So Vader's eye actually popped out of the socket. And if you can go on YouTube and see the match, and you can see, now his eye's not hanging out, but it actually came out of the socket, and you could see his eye bulging. And Vader shoved it back in. I don't know how he did it. I'm sure there's some explanation, but I was so grossed out by it, I didn't watch it. But I mean, really, there's Rey Mysterio on the ground with his eye hanging out. is Bray Wyatt's entire body is in flames and he burns to death, and I'm supposed to believe all that? I'm like, no, what the hell is this? I mean, I'm waiting for the day where a wrestler comes to the ring, pulls out a gun, and just shoots his opponent in the head. Doesn't get arrested, and next week his opponent's back because, oh, well, you know, the bullet missed my brain and just whatever. Just guarantee you that's coming. Anyway, I want to say that it's been a fantastic run in Tokyo at Mr. Fujiwara's Top Ramen Shop. I want to thank Mr. Fujiwara. He's been a very nice man. He's going to be having another podcast hosted here. I wanted that person here to talk to them tonight, but they couldn't make it for some reason. So he's going to be having another podcast here at his ramen shop in a couple weeks. But you should definitely come down here and check it out. It's very good ramen. It's good coffee. You have a nice jazzy atmosphere. It's in the Chiba District in Tokyo, right across the Sailor Moon store. I want it, Mr. You want to come over and say something? No, he's shaking his head no. He's laughing and shaking his head no. He doesn't. Are you sure? Okay, he doesn't want to come over and do the microphone thing. But he's a very humble man. I want to thank him, arigato, for all the years that we've been here. I'm going to miss it. We're headed back to the United States, head up to Florida, and it will be the first episode of Season 5. So I want to thank everybody here, and I'm going to miss all my friends here, but that's what email's for. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just do a search for Victims of Fun. We're on Spotify and many other podcast platforms, including Anchor and Pandora. And remember to hit that supporter button and throw me some cash. It'd be nice. Got a lot of expenses coming up. And for everybody here at Victims of Fun, which basically is just me, I want to thank Mr. Fujiwara. Thank everybody here in Japan for the warm hospitality and accepting me as one of their own. So, when next you hear me again, I will be in sunny Florida. So, good night, everybody. Love each other, and I will see you next episode. Take care.